Grace to you and peace from God who creates and redeems and sustains all things. Amen. Words matter. Hearts matter. And life matters. Over this past weekend, last Saturday in Charlottesville, many of us heard and saw things that we could not imagine would happen in this day and age. Words were said and then taken back and said again. Actions happened that horrified us and made us wonder, frightened us, and gave us pause. Some folks have suggested that it is an anomaly, just a one-off thing, not really deep in our hearts as a nation and as a people. I wonder. And I wonder what we will learn. As I said to the kids in the gospel lesson for today, Jesus is in an argument with the scribes and the Pharisees. It seems Jesus is always arguing with the scribes and the Pharisees. In this particular case, he is arguing about words and rituals. In the previous chapter to the chapter that we read, the scribes and the Pharisees come to Jesus and say to him, "Why is it that your disciples do not follow the tradition of the elders?" Jesus says, "What do you mean?" "Well, they do not wash their hands before they eat." Now, this is also on my list of 10 things that I wish Jesus had never said. Because, of course, like any ritual, the ritual of washing before you eat has its roots in something practical. But Jesus, as a rabbi often will do, he responds to the question with a question. And he asks them, "Well, how is it then that you manage to avoid the tradition, the law, which says that you shall honor your father and your mother?" And the scribes and the Pharisees say, "Well, what do you mean?" And he says, "Well, you know, when you say to your parents, remember that commandment, you shall honor your mother and your father? Well, instead, when it comes time for you to take care of them, you say, 'Well, all the money that I would have given to take care of my parents, I have given to God instead.'" I tried that with my mother. Being a lily, the response that she gave is not repeatable in church. And then Jesus proceeds to tell them, "Look, words matter. What you say somehow reflects what is in your heart. You're worried about ritual, which is like being worried about what food you eat today." And then, and again, in an uncharacteristically explicit moment, Jesus says, "You know, what you put in your mouth, the food that you put in your mouth just comes out the other end. But the words that come from your mouth reflect your heart." That's why it's so difficult this week to ignore words. Words by people who are marching and expressing what they consider to be free speech and their own opinion, and God bless them for that. But when that opinion and when that speech threatens to kill brothers and sisters, who has as its mission to re-enslave a people, we need to pay attention to the words, for they reflect our heart. Later in the story, Jesus continues with this confusing parable. Having just said, "For out of the heart comes evil intentions, murder, adultery, fornication, theft, false witness, slander. These are what defile a person." Jesus then meets the Canaanite woman. And again, it's like watching the train come down the tracks and you're standing on it, and in slow motion you say to Jesus, "Don't say it again this year." She's just asking for help. But tied into his own prejudices, his own history, his own being, Jesus ignores her. Now, for many, many years, we whitewashed this text and said, well, you know what was actually happening is that Jesus is trying to test her to see if she really is persistent enough. Oh, nonsense. I don't buy it. The fact of the matter is that Jesus is the product of his own culture, of his own time. You can't escape your time. And he ignores her, and then he says just horrible things to her. And then he learns. And then his heart is changed. When the Canaanite woman comes to him and kneels before him to do what it is that he is sent into this place to do, he repents. His heart is changed. And healing happens. And the Old Testament lesson with Joseph and his brothers, it is the same story again. If anyone had a case for being vindictive and having a hard heart and using words in a way that would be destructive, I can't think of a better case than Joseph, who had, if you remember from the last few weeks, been threatened with murder by his brothers, thrown into a pit and left to die, pulled out of the pit and sold to slave traders, sold again into the household of Pharaoh. Brothers, all to meet his brother's jealousy. And now what has happened is that Joseph has become a valuable member of Pharaoh's household, of Egypt's royalty. He is the interpreter of dreams. He is the one who keeps the household. He's the comptroller. And if you've ever been in business, you know you can talk to the CEO, but the real person you need to talk to is the comptroller. And when they come in the midst of famine to him, Joseph could have said, do you see what God has done? God has placed me in a place of power for the very purpose of doing one and one thing only. To put all of you in a hole somewhere and leave you to die. But his heart has changed. And healing happens. And he falls on the neck of his brother Benjamin and weeps his joy. It's such a great movie. We expect F-18s and Tom Cruise jumping off of a building to do away with the brothers, but instead he collapses into the arms of his brothers and he weeps on them for joy. And healing happens. The heart is changed. It seems to me as we look at what happened in Charlottesville and things that have happened over so many, many years, we also are due for a change of heart. A more careful selection of the words that we use to describe our neighbors and our friends. What if we began with the basic idea that starts in Genesis and God created it all? Every one. And God did not say, well, the people over in the C section are pretty good. They're pretty good, but the people in the B section, awesome. Into the pit. It's not what God says. God creates all of the people, all of us, in all of our beautiful variety of religion and faith and ethnicity and size and color, and says it is good. How dare we then contradict God. When I saw the video of a young man walking down the streets of Charlottesville saying, "I did not come here to be nonviolent. I came here to learn to be even more violent. And if I have to kill someone to get my way, I will do it." It ought to be impossible for us as Christian people to stand by unmoved by those words. To stand by and do nothing in the face of that is not a choice. To be perfectly honest, I am so inspired by the Canaanite woman who absolutely refused to give up in her persistence to get Jesus' attention that he would do what is right. And in the same way, Christian people around the world are persisting. They are standing hard and fast in love, for our hearts need a change from the very core of who we are. It may not be enough for Christians and Jews, for folks of the Islam faith, and of every kind of person. It was not enough for us to be simply horrified or outraged or sad or scared. If our hearts are changed by the word of Jesus who brings healing to the Canaanite woman's daughter, who brings healing in the breach of the relationship between Joseph and his brothers, who dies on the cross. If our change of heart is rooted in that, then we need to take a stand against hatred. We need to speak with our legislators. We need to send the letters and sign the petitions. But most of all, we need to be able to stand with our own bodies between those who are threatened and those who would bring violence. Maybe we need to stop excusing bad words and slips of the tongue. Maybe we need to call ourselves out for the ways in which we perpetuate our own clinging to power for the sake of race or privilege. For in each moment that we insist on our own way, we denigrate the love that God has given for all people. The more we keep for ourselves in power and in privilege and in process, the more we hold on to all of that, the less likely we are to change the world. Like Jesus, our hearts need to be changed. It's not an easy proposition, is it? Because most of us, no matter what our race or our background, have been conditioned to be a certain way. We have grown up with certain ideas. But the overarching idea of our faith, and that of almost every faith, it seems, is not violence and hatred and exclusion or hierarchy or any of those things. At the root of who we are, at the deepest part of our life, is that love that comes from a God who has given us all of creation and made us to be with one another in peace. I hope that you are horrified by what you have seen. But even more, I hope that all of us are moved in our hearts to create a new life. A life that better reflects this Jesus of Nazareth, who together with his disciples and throughout history has reminded us time and time again that love will always be God's greatest tool and that we are love in this world. Words matter. Words matter a lot. And they reflect the state of our heart. And our heart leads us to the greatest life of all, of loving our neighbor. Amen.